The January 21st, 2025 regular Columbia City Council meeting to order. I invite all those who are able to please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sheila, will you please call roll?
Here.
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 All right. Well, thank you for those attending this evening on this very cold evening. The public may speak multiple times during Columbia City Council meetings. We have opportunities under the sections of our agenda that are public hearing, old business, new business. We do request that people keep their remarks to the legislation being discussed and voted upon. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes. If you're representing an organization that's affected by the legislation being discussed, you may request 5. I do ask you to make sure that I notice you say 5 so that I can make sure that Peyton puts 5 on the shot clock. I do ask people also to respect the time limits, so we want to make sure we're being fair to everybody having their voice heard. I do ask that we avoid applause, boos, demonstrations that could intimidate others from speaking. I remind us to address issues, not individuals, and please refrain from personal attacks, especially on city staff. Disruptions will be addressed with a warning and, if necessary, removal and recess. And then at the end of the council meeting, we have general comments where you can talk about anything you want to talk about. So if you want to, you can save for that. All right, so up first on our agenda, we have approval of the previous minutes. So I'll make a motion to approve the January 6, 2025 regular meeting minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Roy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Same side? All right. Moving on to the approval of our agenda, do we have any changes to the agenda?
Oh, yes. I move to... move item. Sorry, I'm going to need a second.
Bill 525 from the consent agenda.
Yes, thank
and
you.
And then it has to go with B625 as well. So is
Correct.
That the ones? Okay. So we have a motion to move B525 and B625 from the consent agenda to old business. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Oh, actually, we don't need a second. They can just be approved for that. Sorry. Now, but I will ask this. So I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as amended. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second for that. All those in favor of approving the agenda as amended say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Seconded that. I'm sorry.
Nick Foster.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on for this evening, we have no special items this evening, though every item is special. But we do have appointments to boards and commissions. I'll comment, this is a monthly, we do appointments to boards and commissions and encourage, there are a few that still have, that we have to re-advertise. So if you're interested in being involved in local government, please take a look at those. So up first, we have the Board of Health, and we have 2 applicants for 1 vacancy. So I'll ask Sheila to call roll.
Mr. Lovelady.
Samantha Joyner.
Mr. Foster.
Samantha Joyner.
Mr. Waterman.
Samantha Joyner.
Ms. Peters.
Samantha Joyner.
Ms. Buffalo.
Lauren McQuaid.
Ms. Carroll.
Samantha Joyner.
Joyner received more than 4 votes.
Okay. Up next, Climate and Environment Commission. We have 1 applicant for 1 vacancy. So if there's no objection, Eileen Avery will be appointed to the Climate and Environment Commission. Any objection?
Objection.
All right. For the Disabilities Commission, we have 2 applicants for 1 vacancy. So Sheila, will you please call roll?
Mr. Lovelady.
Tammy Teal.
Mr. Foster.
Alexis Zimmerman.
Mr. Waterman.
Tammy Teal.
Ms. Peters.
Alexis Zimmerman.
Ms. Buffalo?
Alexis Zimmerman.
Ms. Carroll?
Tammy Teal.
That's 3-3. We'll have to start again, and I'll start with Mr. Foster this time.
Alexis Zimmerman.
Mr. Waterman?
Tammy Teal.
Ms. Peters?
Alexis Zimmerman.
Ms. Buffalo?
Alexis Zimmerman.
Ms. Carroll?
Tammy Teal.
Mr. Lovelady?
Tammy Teal.
We're still at 3s, so this time I'll start with Mr. Waterman.
Tammy Teal.
Ms. Peters.
Alexis Zimmerman.
Ms. Buffalo.
Alexis Zimmerman.
Ms. Carroll?
Alexis Zimmerman.
Mr. Lovelady?
Tammy Teal.
Mr. Foster?
Alexis Zimmerman.
Alexis Zimmerman received 4 votes.
Thank you. Moving on for Firefighters Retirement Board, we have one applicant, Stephen Jeffrey, and can be appointed if there's no objection.
No objection.
Similarly, for Housing and Community Development Commission, we have one applicant for the vacancy. So if there's no objection, Ryan King can be appointed.
No objection.
And then moving on, we've got Parking Advisory Commission. So we have 3 applicants for 2 vacancies. These terms will be appointed through February 1st, 2028. I will note that the person not appointed can be considered next month because we will also be doing an appointment at that month, as well as any other ones that are proposed for us. So Sheila, will you please call roll on the Parking and Advisory Commission?
For the first vacancy, Mr. Lovelady?
Kenny Kam.
Mr. Foster?
Kenny Kwam.
Mr. Waterman?
Kenny Kwam.
Ms. Peters?
Kenny Kwam.
Ms. Buffalo?
Kenny Kwam.
Ms. Carroll?
Kenny Kwam.
4 votes. And now, second vacancy, Mr. Lovelady?
Stephen Jeffrey.
Mr. Foster?
Shane Lowe.
Mr. Waterman?
Stephen Jeffrey.
Ms. Peters?
Shane Lowe.
Ms. Buffalo?
Stephen Jeffrey.
Ms. Carroll?
Stephen Jeffrey.
Stephen Jeffrey received 4 votes.
And then for our final one that we had applicants for, all 3 applicants for the tree board, so Stephen Bybee, Michael Kidd, and Patricia Quakenbush, can be appointed if there's no objection. Any objection?
No objection.
All right. Moving on, we have no scheduled public comment this evening or public hearings, so we'll move on to the old business, and we have 2 items that were pulled from consent. So Sheila, will you please call, read Bill 525 and Bill 625?
Council Bill 525 is an ordinance granting a waiver and design adjustment relating to the proposed final plat of LaFon subdivision for sidewalk construction along portions of Green Ridge Road and Brown Station Road, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading. Council Bill 625 is an ordinance approving the final plat of LaFon subdivision, accepting the dedication of rights of way and easements, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Thank you, Sheila. Mr. Teddy, I think we have a staff report.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Councilperson. Tim Teddy, Community Development Director. And there's 2 ordinances here. One waives sidewalk construction for a final plat of subdivision to be called LaFond subdivision. And then the second ordinance would approve the subdivision itself. So this first one is what we call a design adjustment. So this subdivider is requesting that council waive the usual requirement with new subdivisions that sidewalk be built along the frontage of the property. Typically it's 1 foot within the lots, and 5 foot wide concrete sidewalk is a typical city public sidewalk. The subject property is about 1.7 acres. It's a little larger than that before subdividing, but they are dedicating a narrow band of right-of-way on Green Ridge Road, and there's no need for additional right-of-way on the section of Brown Station Road that it fronts on. But currently this property has 2 dwelling structures on it. One's a single-family home, and one is a small duplex. When I say small, it's about a 1,200 square foot total structure with 2 addresses, single story, about 600 square feet estimated per unit on that. And these are dwellings that were built in possibly the late 50s, but I believe the duplex came in probably the late 1960s, but the house is possibly built as early as the 1950s, as a number of homes in this neighborhood were. There's also a intermittent stream that runs through the property. It's a tributary to the Bear Creek, and I mention that because that creates some constraint on development. We have what's called a stream buffer, and that's been delineated on the plat by the surveyor, and that's a protection zone for both the benefit of the stream and for the benefit of the property owner, so that they're not subjected to the effects of erosion over time. And then there's also a flood hazard mapped, meaning commonly called floodplain. So that's an area where if there's construction, a floodplain development permit would be required in that particular area. So, and then there's a total of 5 driveway approaches on Green Ridge Road. There's actually 2 driveways that serve the single family home, and one is kind of a horseshoe shape or loop driveway. So that is a total of 3 driveway approaches, and then there's 2 for the duplex that's mentioned. And these are all things that are possible constraints that might add a little bit of cost in constructing sidewalk. Altogether, it's going to be over 500 linear feet of sidewalk if the waiver is not granted. However, the way we apply a sidewalk requirement in subdivisions is as buildings go in, the sidewalk goes in with the building construction. And this applicant has indicated that creating 3 lots by subdivision would create 1 additional building site. This owner desires to sell off, I believe, 2 of the 3 lots. So it's currently an owner occupancy with a licensed long-term rental on this property. So the staff presented a report to the commission, and they deliberated quite a bit over this, questioned our applicant, who is here this evening to answer your questions. And at the end of the design adjustment portion of the vote, 6 in favor, 2 against. And then the full commissioners present, all the commissioners present, voted 8-0 to approve the plat. The plat design is not dependent on the sidewalk requirement, so council conceivably could do the same thing because it doesn't affect the configuration of the lots in any fashion. So with that, I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Can we clarify on the last statement that you just made, Tim?
Yeah.
It was our understanding that the variance had to be voted on the sidewalk variance before the plat could be.
Yeah, and the sidewalk is not shown on the final plat, so it would, you can approve a subdivision in those cases because it doesn't affect the design of the subdivision, so to speak. It's the underlying improvements that are required that are being varied, and those are not shown. Those would be shown on a sidewalk construction plan, but not the recorded subdivision plat.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Maybe. questions for staff. Are you clarifying on that?
No.
Okay. So, Valerie, you had requested for this to be pulled from consent. Do you want to lead questions?
Yeah. I was wondering if you could show us the placement of the design adjustment. Do you have a map?
It would be, as mentioned,
a locator.
The best I can do is to hold something up here. It's along the frontage that's on Brown Station Road. And by the way, this is a section of Brown Station that's south of a fully improved realignment of Brown Station that was done a number of decades ago, and that has sidewalks, that has, the realigned section has sidewalks, it has bike lanes, has curb and gutter. This particular part of Brown Station, I'll call it Old Brown's, or the old line of Brown Station, doesn't have any sidewalks, it has drainage ditches, doesn't have curbs and gutters, but the typical placement would be.
Tim, there's a projector next to you that you can show
the
map.
Is that working?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought we took that out of. I misspoke earlier. I said 1 foot within the lots. It would be actually 1 foot within the right of way. So sorry, okay. I got that inverted.
It'll take a minute for Dalton to bring it up there.
Yeah. So I'm just to clarify, are they asking for a waiver for sidewalk construction along the frontage of both Brown Station and Green Ridge?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I'll mention this, that this entire neighborhood, all of Green Ridge Road between Blue Ridge and Brown Station, there are no sidewalks, as well as the other intersecting street.
Yeah, so
forms this neighborhood.
Thanks for putting this up. I see it now.
Yeah. So right here is the typical placement of sidewalk. And at the hearing, there was some discussion of here, there's a, mm-hmm. a stream that I mentioned that goes under the road, and there's a very large corrugated pipe that receives that stream to go under, and a little bit of a gully there, so that would add some cost to the sidewalk. That was one of the arguments made by the applicant.
So the sidewalk portion that is most affected by the stream is the farthest away from Brown Ridge and the portion that already has a duplex improved on it, correct?
Yeah, that's right. The stream is located here. There are some overhead utilities on that side of the street too, so there's the possibility that they'd either have to be maneuvered around or even moved.
And can you show us the placement of the Colt Railroad Trailway that's proposed?
Yeah, and I don't have a design to show, but I can show you where that right-of-way is. Right here, it'll indicate Colt Railroad. And something interesting about this, the surveyors indicated the existing road pavement.
Tim, can you make sure you're at the microphone?
Oh, sorry.
Or we bring it over to you.
Yeah, I need one of those clip-ons. So there's the Colt Railroad line, and then there's an indication of the road pavement is offset, mm-hmm. meaning it's much closer to the city's Colt Railroad parcel. In fact, it runs into it than it is the right-of-way line on the other side of the street. So there's a lot of green space.
There's an embankment.
On the housing side.
The reason I pulled this from a consent agenda, this went to planning and zoning with a recommendation for denial of the waiver from staff. It was approved, the waiver, on a very marginal vote. 6-2, it sounded from the discussion that a lot of commissioners were in the middle area and could have gone either way. But what really threw me for this is that there was no presentation of the Colt Trailway in the staff report or discussed at planning and zoning. In fact, the commissioners weren't aware of the presence of that project in the CIP. And I think that very easily could have changed the outcome of that vote. I'd also note that it would be on the scheduled public hearing agenda for us if it had been a 5-4 vote as opposed to a 6-3. So to me, the Colt Railway Trail that's proposed is a very important feature for pedestrian connectivity.
Let's keep it to questions right now, Valerie, and then we'll get to any other questions for staff?
I'll wrap up my questioning in that case.
Yeah, Nick. Hold on a second. All right. I want to make sure that Tim hears your question. Okay. Yeah, Nick.
Tim, when you were looking at the criteria about within the analysis, there were two things that were not supported. One was about the adjustment being consistent with the city's comprehensive plan, and the other with making it significantly more difficult or dangerous for automobiles and to circulate and other forms of transportation to circulate through there. So it sounds to me like planning and zoning was torn about this. I guess I'm asking you, were the decisions about not supporting these two rather technical decisions? That is, when you look at the comprehensive plan, for instance, and it doesn't match up, you just say, well, that wouldn't be supported in this sense. But is that a judgment on whether a waiver should be provided?
I think it's looking at how we framed the criteria and just doing a fairly narrow technical reading of it, to use your term. Again, in a neighborhood where you don't have any sidewalks, this would be the start. So one might think, okay, what's the possibility of getting some kind of complete linkage? And it was brought up in the testimony that we had done a waiver for a sidewalk on a lot that fronted on Broadway and had sidewalk on Broadway, and then it was the side street where the waiver was granted because that side street did not have sidewalk. So the feeling was that it wasn't absolutely needed in those circumstances. So to use that argument here, you have even less of a possibility of an immediate connection. So you could look at it that way, but we had commissioners that voted against the waiver that remarked, well, a sidewalk system has to start somewhere, and if our rules say you have to build a sidewalk with new lots, then so be it, they should build a sidewalk. So those are kind of the two sides. It's really a philosophy. It's what do you view as being decisive in these kind of matters. I will tell you, I don't think we've had previous land use cases here in a long, long time on this street or on this older section of Brown Station Road. We don't really see it as a redeveloping area. This is a lot that, because of its size, it has some excess capacity. It's a very wide lot. It's 200 feet wide. And you can see where the lot boundaries have been highlighted on the drawing. You're still going to have 100-foot wide single family lots thereafter subdivision, so they'll be comparable with the neighborhood.
Okay, thanks.
I'm gonna let everyone ask a question first before coming back. Any other questions? Because I know I have one. I'll come back to yours. So can you speak to, Tim, the comment in the staff report about the fee in lieu of construction and the opportunities for that? And then the second part of that question is, based on what you just said about that example on Broadway, is it possible to kind of amend the variance to give it to the Green Ridge portion, but you know what I mean, but require it on the Brown Station to your earlier point?
Yeah, I think that's possible if you see it that way. But for the total, the 584 feet, the staff computed using, I think it's a three-year average of lineal feet of sidewalk construction, $41,394. That was what was reported in our council memo. So that's based on just over $70 a lineal foot. And that's for reference. The ordinance does say that could be a sidewalk alternative, is accepting cash in lieu of actual construction.
And to the second point, Nancy, would it have to be known at this time what that full dollar amount, or could guidance be given?
So normally what we would do is we would amend the ordinance granting the waiver to require a fee in lieu as the alternative or in exchange for the waiver. Okay. And then that fee is those funds are used to build either this sidewalk at any time within the next 7 years or within a 1 mile radius.
Okay. Yeah, Valerie.
Yeah, I think the question that I have, the big question that I have is, maybe two questions. You said that this is not viewed as an area that is expecting redevelopment. Is Colt Railway Trail not considered redevelopment?
I think that's a future public improvement. It's it's a type of development, but I'm speaking of changes in the land use on the private lots. And it seems like it's a very stable area. It is zoned R1 too, so the land use for the most part matches the zoning. There's a couple instances, including this lot, where there's two houses on one lot, but again, this was probably built out before the county had zoning regulations and then annexed to the city.
Would knowledge of the trail project in the CIP have changed the way the staff report and recommendations was presented to planning and zoning in any way?
I think it should have been included, in the sense that could mitigate the total lack of sidewalk, because that would be something that this entire neighborhood could use as kind of a pedestrian collector, so to speak, to get folks to the improved section of Brown Station, which does have sidewalk on both sides, and also opportunities to walk to commercial places, so.
Any other questions for staff before I open this up for public comment? Okay, would anybody from the public wish to speak on Bill 525?
Hi, my name's Kevin Schweikert. I'm the representative for the project and work for Brush & Associates Land Surveying Company, and have provided the plat. And happy to answer any other questions you might have. To be clear, Blue Ridge Road has a sidewalk along it. It's approximately 1,600 feet away. Brown Station Road, the other Brown Station Road that Mr. Teddy spoke of, has a sidewalk on it. It's over 900 feet away. So our argument was that this would be a small portion of sidewalk that may be built, but because of the terrain and the embankment that was spoken of here down to the existing pavement of Brown Station Road, even navigation from the sidewalk, if it were to be built along the right-of-way, 1 foot from the lot line within the right-of-way, there would be approximately 15 to 35, I think it was 35 feet of terrain to cross, grass, ditch, to get back to the pavement, which is where they would continue their path. Regarding the future development of the railroad right-of-way as a pedestrian sidewalk, I think it's a great idea. I used to walk those tracks when I was a kid, when the railroad was running. It's a lot safer with a sidewalk there. I think that's a future public project. This is all private ground and private development. Like Mr. Teddy said, the subdivision and all these subdivisions around here were developed in the 1960s, late 50s. They're all developed. There's not another lot left to be developed. And future development and the likelihood of this sidewalk ever having any connectivity to any other sidewalk in these neighborhoods is very unlikely. And planning and zoning, my feel from them when this was being discussed is, two dissented based on philosophy. Sidewalk just needs to be built because it's part of the, you know, the regulations. The others saw the common sense in it and just decided it doesn't make a lot of sense for this neighborhood. And I referred back to another situation that was just like it approximately, but had more connectivity than this one. And it was just done in May or June of this year. Decided that a design adjustment was appropriate, Greenwood and Broadway at the intersection. And Mr. Teddy brought that up. So those were some of the arguments. For the sake of time, I'm not going to go through the report. You all have it in the minutes. You can look and read it. But please, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them on any part of this.
We might at the end allow others from the public to speak, and then might call you back up when we have questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on the proposed sidewalk variance? And just a quick clarification, did I see, Nancy, are we discussing B-525 and public hearing on B-625 or public comment on B-625, but they are dependent on one another when we get to the vote?
We do actually, if you do not grant the design adjustment or design waiver for the sidewalk, we will need to amend the ordinance for the for the subdivision for the final plat to require a performance contract.
Okay, thank you. All right, would anybody else from the public wish to speak? All right, coming back to this one, Betsy.
I just have a question about the Colt Railroad project. Is that a Parks and Rec project? Okay, thanks.
Done.
Couple of questions. One, do we have any kind of traffic study showing the traffic on Brown Station so that, you know, whether there's a sidewalk or not, if they decide to use the proposed Colt sidewalk, you know, to ease of access?
I don't have one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it for the moment.
Yeah.
Actually, I may have a question for Gabe, if that's all right.
Gabe, would you mind coming up to the staff?
Thanks. Is it?
Oh.
There we go. You got it, Tim? Technology, sorry.
And we'll have Dalton switch the feed over so people aren't staring at the counter. But
I want that. Yeah, so I view the Colt Railway Trail as an important amenity, a transportation amenity for the people living in those houses on this plat and down the street from there. And it is a transportation network question. It's an affordability question because cost of transportation is such a large part of affordability. My question, comparing this trail to, say, the one that goes along South Providence, between the Auto Road and South Providence, at what points would you envision that trail networking to adjacent neighborhoods? I know there's some terrain, there's a bit of an embankment as you go down the slope, but I also picture the South Providence Trail navigates those in places. Is that part of the vision of that project?
Yeah, so Gabe Huffington, Parks and Recreation Director. So we have funding starting in fiscal year be 2027 for planning of the Colt Trail, and then we have funding to complete the project in FY 2030 and 2031. What we will start to do in the next couple of years leading up to that is, and a lot of this has to do with Public Works Department as well, is looking at the intersections along the Colt Trail. So much different than the Providence Trail is that there are multiple intersections that we will have to navigate. And so we'll look at how we build the trail with connections at each one of those intersections potentially. We'll also have to evaluate any other connections via neighborhoods and how those would work out, but haven't dug into it a whole lot in terms of the right connection points. A lot of that will have to do with traffic studies, for instance, and then every intersection that kind of goes along that section of the trail.
Yeah, and traffic studies aren't a requirement of this type of sidewalk waiver request. Are we ready to move to council comment?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I did want to ask just kind of in lieu in that a question. So I might ask Shane Creech with Public Works to come forward and just talk about, are there any projects on the sidewalk master planned in this area that were already, or petitions for adding sidewalks in this area? That you are aware of.
There aren't any petitions that I'm aware of. As far as the sidewalk master plan is concerned, there's really nothing in that area. We have a current sidewalk master plan project on Oakland Gravel Road. It's like the third of three that we've done up there. There's really nothing currently on that plan north and east of there, so.
All right, thank you.
So here's what I'm hearing.
Oh, I don't, is this a question? Sorry, I've got a couple questions. All right, I've got Nick and then Don.
Don has his hand up.
Well, he's asked a question before though, so a question.
Okay. Well, I didn't do it. Oh.
Go on this one.
Okay. And maybe the representative can speak to this, but I'm just wondering about the purpose of the replat. And unless a part of that that property is going to become developed, there wouldn't really be a reason for the replatting, would there?
Well, they desire to divide it into three lots so that they can sell portions of the property.
Okay,
so that requires subdivision.
That's the intent.
Yeah, and one of those would be a vacant and undeveloped lot. One I would view as a developed lot that possibly might redevelop, depending on what
where the duplex is.
What the owner wants to do with that structure. And then I've heard nothing to indicate there's a plan to remove the house that's near the corner. So I would view that as an existing improved lot to or an existing developed lot.
Okay, thanks. So,
yeah.
Don, did you have a question?
Couple of questions. One, circling back to what the representative from the project said, just wanted to clarify with you, there's nothing else planned for this neighborhood at this juncture that would require sidewalks or whatever, correct?
Nothing that we're aware of.
Okay. Shane, and again, just to clarify, make sure I heard you correctly, that the master plan that was cited by city staff, this area, this block, this section is actually not in the master plan as far as sidewalk development?
Yes, that's correct. There's an avenue by which you could pursue getting added to the master plan. A lot of our projects that we do in public works, we try to pull off of that sidewalk master plan. So when I get a request for a sidewalk that's not on the master plan, usually I direct them that direction, so that way we know that it's kind of gone through that process. Otherwise, there's lots of sidewalk needs in town, but there's nothing in this area that I'm aware of.
Okay, thank you.
Are there questions? All right, council comments?
I will ask one more question. How frequently do citizens request to be added to the sidewalk master plan or file petitions to do so?
It's pretty sporadic, and those questions come to us in community development, and then we'll periodically ask the Bicycle and Pedestrian Commission to study those. One thing I'll say about the sidewalk master plan is it's really designed to address what we call the major roads, so the arterial roads, the collectors, because we have a lot of needs on those roads, and it's thought that because those are likely to have a higher volume of pedestrians or a greater need to get pedestrians out of the roadway for safety because of vehicle speeds and volumes, those are priority for the master plan.
So it's unlikely
and this is
to
a local
address.
Residential street system here.
Yeah. Here's where I'm what I'm hearing. There's no plan for sidewalks in the future except for a major trail plan that will function as a sidewalk. I think it likely would have been viewed very differently at planning and zoning. I can't speak for them, only the conversations that I've had. I can say that it's extremely uncommon to vote against staff recommendation on this kind of waiver. And typically some of the considerations that are taken place is what are the existing opportunities for this to feed into the sidewalk to transportation network? And I see a really big opportunity that is planned. I hear at least one situation cited where we gave a waiver. I think that one was the exception to the rule and not the rule. It was uncommon, and it was in a very, very old neighborhood. And if I recall right, it was also a very close vote and somewhat disputed. You have to start somewhere. Adding a transportation network like this is very likely to significantly change the pedestrian activity in the area and the demand for such a trail. There could be connectivity to that neighborhood, and there could be people asking for connectivity. And that's something that the city would pay for sometime down the line. We have required sidewalks. This is a code requirement, right? They're asking for a waiver from a code requirement. We're not requiring something from them that everyone doesn't do. We have required people to build sidewalks because maybe someday their neighbor might build a improvement in addition on their house and build a little portion of sidewalk and connect them. This is a much larger discussion and a much more reasonable discussion than many of those that we did require. And that's really where I'm coming from on this.
Other council comments? Yeah, Betsy.
Yeah, I look at this as sort of a dead-end street. I mean, it doesn't quite dead into the Colt Railroad that we might get around to building in 7, 8, 9 years if this goes right. But I don't see that people, and having watched people, at least in my neighborhood and out at Old Hawthorne, completely ignore the sidewalks that are built for them and walk in the streets, I'm not really sure that adding the sidewalk at the end of a street that has no sidewalks is going to make any difference. So I guess I'm sort of torn between whether we should require it, because you're right, we have required it in the past just to start, you know, we have to start somewhere with sidewalks, but also saying that people are perfectly capable of getting to the Colt pedestrian walkway, if that's what they have, or bikeway, without having a sidewalk. And I'm not sure that that's going to improve their ability to get to the Colt Railroad, pedestrian, whatever. So I'm sort of in favor of approving what we already have.
All right, Don?
Yeah, and for me, a couple of things, as you know, Valerie pointed out, it's okay, it's required by code. However, to Betsy's point, it's kind of a dead-end street. There are no other sidewalks in this area, so pardon the expression, but it'd be kind of like a chunk of sidewalk to nowhere. Okay, maybe we've done it.
Done that before.
And given that there's no other plans to develop currently on the table, and which I understand could change tomorrow, I'm leaning with Betsy and going ahead and voting yes on granting the waiver.
And Nick?
Well, I see Tim used the word philosophy at some point there, and I think that this is largely a philosophical conversation, and that makes it important. One of the things that I see here that needs to be included in the conversation is about housing itself and the opportunity for the development of housing. This is an extraordinarily large lot. There is the opportunity for developing one and maybe two lots there. And when we're facing a housing crisis, I mean, I was in the Affordable Housing Coalition meeting today, and this conversation around what we do to remove barriers for people so that construction can happen comes up all the time and is under constant and ongoing review in staff and otherwise. So that's where my conflict comes here. I feel like this could be a barrier that these folks and others might see to developing lots for the production of housing that we desperately need. And so that's where my conflict comes in on this.
This is in Third Ward, and earlier today I did actually drive through there. And so I'm just like everybody else up here, conflicted between should we or should we not. But I think my biggest problem is what's going to be the new standard of when do we grant the waiver or when do we not? Because if it's happened once, it was recommended by staff again, and then the recommendation says that we build sidewalks, and in history we show that we have done it even when there is no other connections. When do we address when to or when not to do this? So that's my conflict.
So I think for this one, I appreciate, I agree it's part of a larger discussion. Right, this idea, this one project, right, is part of when you bring up the Colt Trail, the rail, that's a thing that we know we need a trail system that is going north of town so people have access, alternative means, rather than by automobile. I think for me it's more of a, I appreciate Gabe's comment that when it comes time for building the trail, there will be coordination with Public Works about the multitude of intersections and tie-ins that will need to happen from neighborhoods to connect with that. And I feel like this conversation, we're jumping towards that, but with this one project in front of us. And I'm not sure that this one, you know, is going to be the one who makes or breaks that. And I think, to me, I lean more towards maybe the lieu, the fee in lieu of construction, you know, because this idea of that sort of having it ready. But then again, I know by the year 2030 rolls around, that money's not going to cover. And it's also, you said, the seven-year kind of requirement. So I just wonder about whether or not anything would happen with that. So I think I would more of like the agree with, I appreciate the comments made from the commissioners on the additional things that were brought up on it. I don't know, but I also don't have the crystal ball, can guess and look back to see what they would have thought if they had talked about the Colt Trail. But to me, I think of it more of a, I want to make sure that the conversation about how we're connecting neighborhoods to a trail development starts at the front end when we're talking about the plan and for that development. And so making sure that that direction that council is given is thought of at that time, and not necessarily piecemealed through this, because again, I don't know how many other projects we're going to have come up for redevelopment along this portion of the Old Brown Station Road. You want to respond back or make comment before I have Sheila call roll?
Sure. I think I want to be clear that our planning procedure usually goes out 50 to 100 years. Our area plans and our evaluation in the staff report usually includes discussion of this kind of thing. And I'm very surprised that it did not. We do have to start somewhere. I think this is a good candidate for fee in lieu. I know it won't cover all of it. That's been a problem with our fee in lieu program for decades. It never has and it never will unless we change it. That's the same thing with sidewalk connections. They won't connect unless we change it. We typically, the planning process is meant to start forming those. And yes, it needs to be planned at the start of the project, but we need to start planning these things 50 years ahead of projects, not at the start of project. And right now, the reason why this doesn't exist is because the county didn't have zoning regulations. And so we are passing forward the decision-making process that is 50 years old instead of passing forward 50 years ahead. And instead of sticking to our current code. And I'm here to stick to our current code and to plan for the future. And this project, it's likely to tie in to neighborhoods. This is going to affect affordability for the people living up and down there. They may be petitioning for a sidewalk 30 to 50 years from now. And that's where our lack of planning in, I guess, in the county's code in this case, feeds into those problems. It's difficult to put them in if the right-of-way isn't already there, if the sidewalk isn't already placed. It's much easier now than it will be later. And the city will have to pay for it later.
So you mentioned, just to clarify, you mentioned the fee in lieu of construction. Would you like to propose that we amend what we have to include that in the, I don't know if it'd be performance, I don't know how the definition would be, but before you, I mean, is that something that you would like to?
Absolutely. This is something that would often be proposed, yeah. Fee in lieu.
So what would that be, Nancy?
Sure, that would be to add a new section to the ordinance B525. To require the a fee in lieu in the amount of $41,394, which is the estimate for construction. And if that's something that you want to do, I have some draft language and I can actually read to you the exact amendment that would be, but.
Is that of interest?
Yeah, that's of interest to me. Actually, this brought up another thought of mine. As we discussed $44,000 and affordability and barriers to affordability. I want to be clear that I'm an advocate for affordability. I always have been. This is one of the things that feeds into affordability, providing amenities for the tenants that allow them to get places cheaply by their own transportation is affordability. And it's long-range affordability, not short-range affordability. We need to have in place fee waivers for affordability. We need to look at ways to remove barriers to affordability, and those are frequently considered at the planning level. Waiving sidewalks is less commonly a classic thing to waive for affordability. And that's all I'll say. Would you like me to make a motion?
Let's have Nancy read the wording for it.
Yep. If you want to make the motion, I'll give you the exact wording. So the motion would be to add a section 2 to the ordinance, and that would read, the owner, in lieu of construction of sidewalks adjacent to the property located along portions of Green Ridge Road and Brown Station Road, shall pay to the city the equivalent of the cost of the sidewalk construction, which has been determined to be $41,394. The city shall hold such funds in escrow and may authorize, at the direction of the Director of Public Works, the use of such funds for the construction or maintenance of sidewalks adjacent to the property or within a 1 mile radius of the perimeter of such property. The funds shall be used by the city for such purposes within a period of 7 years following the payment into escrow by the owner. Any portion of the funds remaining in escrow at the expiration of 7 years shall be returned to the then owners of the property.
You want to make that motion?
I'll make that motion for the purpose of moving forward.
Okay. Do we have a second on the motion for amending to add the fee in lieu of construction?
I'll second it.
Okay, second. Discussion on the motion on the table. Don and then Nick.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You recognize.
Come on, guys.
No. I understand Valerie's comment about addressing affordability, and yet by adding either the cost of the sidewalk or the fee in lieu of, we're increasing the price of this because it's going to get passed on, and that also addresses the issue of affordability. This is the kind of thing, quite frankly, that is why it is so expensive to develop in Columbia. A fee here, a fee there, you'll put this here, you'll put that there. We disagree, Valerie. We disagree. But you put a fee here, a fee there, require this, require that. Okay? So that's my thoughts on it.
Nick, you had your...
Well, Don was voicing my concern. I think that when this is replatted, and I assume the replat will certainly be approved, but we're talking about one house that is likely to be built there, and yet the sidewalk will cover that entire area. And so if this were an area that were being developed in the whole, then I could see it more. I think this would discourage development of the lot. And so that's my concern.
All right, so discussion on the motion to amend the ordinance to have the fee in lieu. Yeah, Betsy.
Well, one thing is we're making the assumption that they're going to keep a six-year-old duplex and that single family home there and just develop a third lot. I don't know that we have any guarantee that they're not going to redevelop all three lots. And it does increase the cost because you're developing some property, but I would be almost more opposed to it if it was apartment buildings, if we were actually increasing the affordable housing in the city. But adding one house, I'm not sure that that's really going to be addressing the affordable housing issues in the city, or even three houses if they redevelop the other two.
All right, on the motion on the table about the fee in lieu discussion. Okay. Sheila, will you mind calling roll on the proposed amendment to the ordinance?
This is on the motion to amend to add the fee in lieu of. Mr. Lovelady?
No.
Mr. Foster?
No.
Mr. Waterman?
No.
Ms. Peters?
No.
Ms. Buffalo?
No.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Okay.
It failed 5-1.
Okay. Yeah, Roy.
I do have a kind of a question, like, when are we going to address when waivers should or should not be granted? Because, and I know this may not be the conversation, but it's going to continue to reoccur. And if we don't speak to that in some way, in some capacity, like, is it a part of new development when we plan to rebuild and knowing that some type of development is actually going to that lot? We need some actual something set in stone that says, hey, this is when a waiver should be granted. We do it for everything else. We use data, we use all those other things. This is a requirement that was put in place to happen, and now we're saying, oh, no, now we don't need it to happen. Now, I'm not saying that this is the appropriate place for it.
Yeah, let's bring that up, because I think that's a good conversation to have, kind of like planning for that conversation, probably also with staff and P&Z, especially as we're making amendments to the UDC and other things, kind of part of that overall clear process and procedures of which we're following and kind of sticking to. Yeah. Valerie, did you have something on that?
I think what I want to say is, in this case, there is a process in the code. There is a clear process that was outlined. It's outlined in the staff report by staff. There's considerations. The staff report recommended denial. And even then, the considerations didn't include another attribute that also likely tipped it farther towards denial. We need to have more concrete processes. I don't think this is horribly subjective. Usually, it's uncommon for it to become this subjective. It is a fairly clear-cut thing, and we don't get too many requests to raise sidewalks.
Okay.
It's uncommon to be recommended to change to waive sidewalks for affordability reasons. When you look at recommended fee waivers for affordability, usually doesn't make the list.
All right, Sheila, would you please call roll on Bill 525 and then Bill 625 individually?
Council Bill 525, which is the granting of the design adjustment. Mr. Lovelady? Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
No.
And then we don't need to do anything with, okay.
Nope.
Council Bill 625, Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for that. Moving on, Sheila, will you please read the items on the consent agenda twice and call the roll?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 125, 225, 325, 425, 725, 825, and resolutions 925, 1025, 1125, and 1225. Bills 125, 225, 325, 425, 725, 825, and resolutions 925, 1025, 1125, and 1225. Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Moving on, we have quite a few items under introduction and first reading. Sheila, would you please read the items under intro and first reading?
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 925, 1025, 1125, 1225, 1325, and 1425, first reading.
And I meant not a lot on Intrum First Read, sorry. All right, moving on to our report section. Our first one is the Columbia Arts Fund proposed membership for the advisory committee. Do we have a staff report?
Yes, hi, Sarah Dresser, manager for the Office of Cultural Affairs. I periodically come up here with this report for an update in the membership to our Columbia Arts Fund advisory committee in the establishing documents. Anytime there's a membership change, I bring this to you, and that committee is comprised of three members of the commission, as well as the manager for the Office of Cultural Affairs. At our December 9th, 2024 Commission on Cultural Affairs meeting, the people who agreed to serve on this advisory committee was our chair, Diana Moxon, along with Jen Jennings, Kathleen Murphy, Kate Nolte, and of course I would stay on. There's no formal rotation to this group, just as members come and go. This group advises our Columbia Arts Fund, which is at the Community Foundation of Central Missouri, as our arts endowment. So yeah, that is the simple report I have for you all.
Any questions from council to staff? Seeing none, I'll make a motion to appoint Jen Jennings, Kathleen Murphy, and Kate Nolte to the committee. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Roy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you for that, Sarah. Appreciate it. Up next is Report 725. This is the Citizens Police Review Board 2024 Annual Report. Do we have any staff response?
No, this is their typical annual report. It does contain a summary of the appeals that they had during the year, as well as audits and complaint data.
Any council questions or comments on this one? I think I just had one, and just it made note that at the time of the report was prepared, the board had not received data from the police department regarding 2024 complaints.
And that's pretty typical. We provide that. The board provides that data to you separately.
Okay.
So you'll get that once that data gets provided to the board. They pass that along.
Well, they were the ones who made the comment that they had not received any.
Right.
So I didn't know where they were on receiving the information.
That it's always a little bit delayed.
Okay.
It's and that's it's typically in their report that data has not been received and is delayed. So you'll get it once they get it. And I don't know that I don't have an update from the police department when they're going to have that, but
okay. All right, any other counsel on that? Thank you. Moving on, report 825 is our monthly finance report. Do we have a staff report?
Yes. Hello, Mayor, members of the City Council, Matthew Lou, the Director of Finance. I am sorry, I did not get my presentation put in, but we can definitely talk about the report. So within your council report this week, you had the first quarter cash breakdowns. So basically explaining the cash position of the city for the various funds and the way it's broken out. So, Jim.
I can kind of quickly go through that. So, for the total cash in the whole pooled cash, we are at $530 million. That was a 2% decrease from the quarter before. Seeing a decrease between the fourth quarter of the prior year and the first quarter this year is not uncommon due to the fact that one of the biggest cash flows we get is property tax, which comes in January. So we typically get a big boost after this quarter, and then we kind of ride that through the rest of the year. Year to date, we were up about 4%. This is largely due to continued levels of sales tax plus levels of our increases to our utility fees that we've seen. So other than that, there's not much else as far as major changes. A lot of the stuff is kind of cyclical. Our operating cash was down largely due to the fact that at the beginning of each fiscal year, we move a lot of operating cash into capital projects. So you usually see our operating cash has decreased at the beginning of the fiscal year and capital projects increase. that carried through this year. And then our debt obligations usually also increases, and that's largely due to the fact that we make our biggest debt payments at the end of our fourth quarter, and then we start to build up our cash reserves for our debt throughout that first quarter and into the next quarter. So I'd be happy to answer any questions on the report.
Questions for staff. Yeah, Betsy.
Okay, so I started reading the council memo, and then you started talking about the cash breakdown narrative. Mm-hmm. That was the second one. Then you went to, where were you?
Oh, okay, so I'm sorry. I jumped around a little bit. So I started on the first section I talked about was
first section of what?
Of the cash breakdown.
The cash breakdown narrative, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Since you've got four of them here, I'm just like, wait a minute, I'm totally lost.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So that was the overall cash. That was on the first page of that cash breakdown. And then I went and talked about the second page of the cash breakdown, the operating cash, and how that was down due to largely movements of operating cash to capital.
Okay, so that's a different report, right? That's not the one that I'm looking at because you just have one page on
No,
those.
You must be looking at the narrative. A narrative, and then there's the actual cash breakdown that has.
I guess what I'd ask is that why don't we, could you guys bring this back next month?
Yeah, we can
And actually have a presentation?
Mm-hmm. Happy to do that.
And then I don't have to keep trying to find it because I can't find it fast enough as you guys talk. So that'd be great if you don't. Is that okay, Mayor?
Well, there'll be another monthly report next month. So when you said bring it back next time, that'll be next month. So perhaps combining the two, showing the presentations together for January, as well as if you have one, you can probably send it out to council as well as showing it to the public at the next meeting.
So it was attached to the Finance and Audit Committee meeting as well. Just didn't make its way into the folder for the meeting tonight.
That's fine.
Okay.
It's totally my fault.
Okay, I just need the information, so next month's fine.
I do have a couple of questions. One's comment, one's a question. When you have the conversation about the auto pay update,
yes.
Can you help me understand, does this mean that we have two types of auto pay payment systems that we're continuing at the same time and customers had the option to choose?
No, so We have one auto pay system now that is currently in place, but that's going away and it's being replaced with Pay It.
Okay.
And so we're doing a cutover, and basically we're trying to get as many people as we can move to the new system before we shut down the old system.
So what I'm seeing then is that there's the potential that, like for the home energy loan example, that 180 for accounts might all of a sudden no longer be paying automatically because they're on the old system.
Yes.
And you have another, you say final reminder email and letter on the 18th. And then you will continue to work with. So does that mean that at that time, if they do not pay, because we've been notifying for how long have we been notifying?
A little over a month now. I think we begin in December.
Yeah, that's correct.
So does that mean that we won't then charge late fees for the majority that have this happen to them, but hopefully we'll get them on the new system?
That's correct.
Yeah, we're going to use the same kind of, remember when we went and did the auto pay for utilities and we wait fees for about, I think it was 2 months. We plan to do the same thing for these ones to get everybody on board.
If I can't make the request and I don't with consent of council, like if there's still high percentages, maybe we extend that a few more months and continue upping our customer reach out.
Definitely.
Okay. That's a large percentage.
I wanted to see something in the 90% range, especially since there's such a small amount. The percentage should be higher before we cut it over.
Yeah. Okay. And to that point, I will acknowledge that in your report, you also talk about the hard work that front staff has been doing on doing the reach out. So I just want to also second that, my appreciation for them doing the proactive work with reaching out to customers about the changes.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any other council comments on this? Great. Appreciate this.
Thank you.
Moving on to our last and final report of this evening. This is the required by state statute report from the North 763 Community Improvement District. It's really for information only. Are there any council comments or questions on it? Seeing none, we'll go on to general comments from the public. Would anybody from the public wish to speak?
Mark Hyam, on behalf of Missouri Peace Works, although I think my comments are short tonight. We're going through a very interesting time in our country's history right now. All know that many changes are happening due to the change in administration. And some of these are going to be very disruptive to people's lives around the country and people right here in Columbia, Missouri. Most immediate that I'm concerned about tonight is the attempt to deport many millions of people, some of whom are members of our community. Most of the folks we're talking about are law-abiding, hardworking residents, many of whom have lived in the U.S. for decades. They often do jobs for a few of us who are native-born citizens would want to have. If millions of these people are deported, it would be an economic disaster for our country and a tragedy for those being deported and their families. Therefore, the city of Columbia should not, in my opinion, and in the opinion of hundreds of PeaceWorks members, be complicit in this matter. What we are asking of you is to make a policy that the Columbia Police Department will not collaborate with ICE, that they will not turn over to ICE people who have simply been in the wrong place at the wrong time. Failing to come to a full stop at a stop sign should not lead to a full stop in one's life. Bottom line, we ask you to support the safety, integrity, and dignity of the individuals and families who are part of our community. If you have any questions, I could try to address them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mark.
Consideration.
Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Renee Carter, Second Ward. I just wanted to make note that I agree with Valerie and Roy when they were talking about we really need to follow through with our policies and ordinances that'll make our city more walkable and bikeable. Is that we do have to start somewhere, and it's never going to be easy where we start to make those decisions. In that particular neighborhood, with the Colt Trail coming on, it's going to be very important for people to have access to get to that trail if they're going to want to walk on it. And I know a lot of neighborhoods where people, they don't have other forms of transportation, but they don't have good sidewalks and they don't have good streets, and their streets are more for cars than they are for people. So I encourage you to sit down together and have a work session and discuss, you know, how are you really going to meet the goals that you've set for a climate action plan, and that's one part of it. And so I appreciate it if you do that. I think it's important to the needs of our city. Thank you.
Thank you, Renee. Anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. Tonight, I'd like to extend a personal thank you to all those volunteers as the city was able to accomplish the first year of our room at the end under one large setting. We have many different issues all the time. You've made the television, Barbara, by way of talking about mental illness. I noticed in the last few days a particular person sitting on the sidewalk in this cold, and I know it to be an area of mental illness. We need to have someone that can approach and solve these issues, because some individuals will not be able to cooperate. That's not what we want to do. We don't want to force them to do nothing, but we certainly don't want to hear about another death, for we had several in the years gone by. The new borough purchase of the Rainbow House, just to let you know, a gentleman from Centralia lost three daughters and gave many years of heading up construction for Habitat. He actually was the gentleman in charge of building that building. as a reminder of, hey, somebody stepped up. All these things are called volunteer positions. To thank you all can thank each and every volunteer that's involved with the homeless, and knowing that a volunteer stepped up to make the Rainbow House, and now we're going to use it for mental illness. These are things to be very proud of in Columbia, Missouri. Tonight, I want to make a comment also about the sidewalks. I chose not to say nothing, but we're going to use the word piecemeal. How can you all sit down and get something accomplished that's not called piecemeal? We built this sidewalk for this home in the year 2019. It's now 2040, and it's about time we got around to building the rest of the sidewalk. Can you imagine that it could be crumbling by this time, however many years later that the piecemeal idea goes about? If you don't know anything about construction, and I've brought it up in the past, are we putting rebar in our sidewalks? We want solid sidewalks and one less cost to the city. If you spend it once, why do you have to keep spending it to keep it going? Thank you. God bless.
Thank you, Gene. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Hello, my name is Adam Morrison. I'm the current president of the Columbia Disc Golf Club. I just wanted to reach out and let you guys know. Some of you may know, some of you may not. Our city was granted the opportunity to host the 2025 Disc Golf World Amateur Championships this coming fall. This would not be possible without the support of the city and Parks and Rec. So on behalf of our Disc Golf Club and our community, I just wanted to reach out and say thank you for your continued support and your continued work with the Parks and Rec Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to council comments. And Roy, we'll start with you.
I don't really have a lot of comments. A lot of things have went on throughout the city, but one of the biggest things that I keep getting emails about is the ice on streets and roads from a lot of people in Third Ward. So I know that you were going to later ask about staff report, but I wanted to make sure that I addressed it on behalf of my constituents, because even my street, it still has ice and snow on it. So I just wanted to let people know that even as a council person, my street still has ice and snow on it to date.
Nick Foster.
On a related note, I just want to appeal to property owners to please clear your sidewalks. For people who use the sidewalks on a regular basis, this has been a really weird snow event, and it continues, and so it's been a big challenge for Public Works to address it. And I know for that same reason, it's a big challenge to clear sidewalks. So just encourage everybody to clear sidewalks as soon as possible, keeping in mind that there are people who use those sidewalks on a regular basis and are sometimes have to move out into the street to avoid an icy sidewalk and then walk around. So just an encouragement about doing that.
Don?
I'll admit when I heard that we were pulling the two items off consent, I was a little annoyed. I was hoping it'd be a quick evening, but it actually turned into a great discussion. A lot of points, counterpoints, but great discussion. And, and as Roy said, we need to set up some standards as when we're looking at granting a waiver, do we have a procedure for it rather than at random? And excellent point. Thank you for bringing that up. Like you, I still continue to get not so many emails, but my street still has ice on it as well. I had to kind of laugh that, Thursday and Friday, it warmed up a little bit, got rid of a lot, some of the ice loosened up, and got cold Friday night, and what do I hear Saturday morning about 9 o'clock? A snowplow going down my street. I think it'd have been a little more effective if you'd have been there the day before, but I understand. We're limited with the facilities that we've got or the resources that we have. We spread them around as best we can. It's getting there, and hopefully by the end of this week, as it warms up some more, we'll finally get rid of this snow, and then we'll move forward from there. And yeah, I too look forward to, as the mayor requested, kind of a lessons learned on some ways of, you know, given what we have as far as resources, we can't resource for an incident like this every year because it doesn't happen every year. So with given the resources that we have, I did have one question. Shane, you're right there, you can ask. As the city has grown, we've talked about police and other facilities, as the city has grown, have we kept pace with as far as our equipment goes for snow removal equipment, or do we need to expand the snow, you know, that fleet?
And I'll just actually, can you hold, put a pin in that? Because that's actually part of the bigger discussion. I think we want you to kind of answer at the end during stuff. Because it's related also to, so make sure that's a note on it. But just overall, like the policy and as we've grown, how we kind of plan for it, I want to give him opportunity to respond to all of that.
Okay, I'll table my question and for the report, unless you're going to ask for it.
No, I was going to do at the end, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Betsy.
I have nothing but ice and snow comments also. I got stuck on my street yesterday. The two-wheel drive thing didn't work very well, but I could back down the street and go the other way, so that's what I ended up doing. On another note, however, I believe you saw the email from a gentleman who called the county commissioner and then called me about snow, and I understand you guys went out there with a backhoe or something. I don't know whether it was that street or another street that I know that you also had to put a backhoe to try and get the ice off of. So as much of a problem as it was, that constituent called me back and thought that I was a miracle worker because within an hour of talking to me, you guys were out there fixing this problem. I don't think it had anything to do with me. I think it had to do with you guys identifying problem cul-de-sacs or problem streets and getting out there. So I want to thank your staff for the work they did, going back and forth a number of times on one street apparently to get the ice off of, because another constituent said, they're out here, they keep going back and forth because that's nothing but ice. So it was a mess. It's still sort of a mess, but I appreciate all the work that they did, the backhoes and the multiple trips up and down roads, even if I still can't get up my hill. But thank you for the work.
Thank you. Valerie.
Yeah. I have snow and ice on mind as well. It's been cold outside. We heard closing comments from the public about volunteers, and I did speak to a handful of people who were volunteering at shelters, and you know, I want to take the moment to thank our volunteers in the city who take the time to care for our most vulnerable population. That's a huge service to our city, and really we can't thank you enough. I want to thank our city workers who cleared those streets, echo the comments of my fellows out here. And also I got a lot of comments besides, you know, frustration at snow and ice on streets, a trash collection and recycling collection. You know, I want to thank our utilities workers for being out there in the cold and the elements. This is our first winter with roll carts, and we're learning how the process works and how to adjust for that. And, you know, I want to thank our workers, and I want to thank our citizens who are learning the process along with us. Thanks for your patience, and make comments, you know, send us your emails if you need help with pickups. We know it's a process. The last thing I wanted to say, I never expected to be taking off a consent agenda, something that came from planning and zoning, or contesting a vote from planning and zoning. Those are my peers. And you can see that I am a nerd and I like to get in the weeds. So thank you for your patience. I'm glad it was a good discussion.
Thank you for that. So just for mine, and this will kind of, just one quick note, I just got back from the U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting in Winter, or their winter meeting in D.C., and I'll say, I don't know if it feels good, but to know that a lot of the issues that we're dealing with, so are every other U.S. city dealing with. Housing affordability, access to housing, transportation infrastructure, polarization of people and community. The list goes on, and we're dealing with it as well. I will say I did find value and appreciation in hearing some of the best practices that are working in cities are some of the ones that are coming out from some of the staff reports that we've been receiving. So, example, the recommendations for going forward from our housing study on some of the things that we've heard in partnership with the county are some of the best practices that are working in the other cities. So seeing that sort of implementation success, I think, you know, gives me that comfort. But they also commented how long it took. So obviously is not as happy of one of them be like, it was quickly, all of a sudden it was fixed, but appreciated that. I also want to just make a quick comment on something. One of the speakers at the conference was the outgoing Surgeon General. And this gets to something that I think that we're seeing a lot. And it was the idea about community. And he was talking to the point about seeing a lot of struggles with youth, with people of all ages, in loneliness and in depression and mental health and concerns. And you talked about the three essential elements that fuel our fulfillment and what has been missing from people's lives. So I'm just gonna read, it's just like three sentences. But he talks about the three elements are relationships, service, and purpose. And so relationships keep us grounded and bonded to each other. Service, from formal volunteering to informal, small acts of kindness is about helping each other. And purpose gives us our life a sense of direction and meaning. And together, relationships, purpose, and service constitute the triad of fulfillment. And I think about that in something that our Mayor Pro Tem often talks about in seeing the connectivity between especially some of our unsheltered and giving support and understanding with that. And that idea about some of it's from a loss of relationships. And so I just want to say that to say I'm appreciative of all the opportunities we've had to work on with this. And then I'll make a bid for service on boards and commissions. We always have opportunities for people to give back. And that's a way to become involved and involved in our community. So I say that to then go back to snow and ice. And the service and the purpose that our public works, and then obviously utilities, who are responding to a water main break in my own neighborhood. Thanks for hopefully having my water pressure back by the time I get home, Dave. But I know we've dealt with a lot. Over the last 2 weeks, we had two back-to-back events where we thought we were responding and done, and then our response was slowed. So I mentioned this to council earlier and sent this heads up to staff, but I think it would be beneficial, and I know you can't give us the full after-action report this evening, Shane, but to kind of give some when we might expect an after-action kind of report evaluating how the response went to this, what we did to prepare as well as afterwards. But also I think it would be beneficial to provide some high-level overview over our policy and procedures for preparing for when we know inclement weather is approaching and then what happens to it from there.
Sure. I appreciate the heads up. I'm a little bit better prepared than if you'd have sprung it on me right here. I'll go through this and then we can answer any questions, but I kind of wrote something up so that I wouldn't miss anything. Public Works is planning a more comprehensive report next month, most likely during the second meeting in February. We'd also recommend a yearly work session in late summer, early fall to discuss winter weather policies and procedures. We've done that in the past and should probably have pursued that this year. I think the combination of mild winters the last couple years and the limited number of available work sessions led to us getting complacent in that regard. That isn't fair to new council members, and a refresher for all of us never heard anything. That said, I think it's important to start with current Public Works policy regarding winter weather response. Right or wrong, equipment, staffing, and other resources have been built over time to address first, second, and third priority routes as a continuous operation until they reach near normal conditions. Columbia has just under 1,500 total lane miles, of which we have designated 691 lane miles as priority routes. We then enter neighborhoods when there's a greater than 4 inches of snow and plowed roadways to a passable condition. Passable is defined as a front-wheel drive vehicle at slow speed utilizing reasonable winter weather driving. The policy itself, as with any policy, is there for periodic review and modification, but that would be extremely difficult to do during the winter season and would have significant budget impacts and take time to change dramatically. The street division has 45 employees when fully staffed. Due to some changes over the years, it isn't an 100% apples-to-apples comparison, but for reference, the street division had 40 employees in 2009 and was responsible for approximately 1,200 lane miles. Therefore, with the need to run in continuous 12-hour shifts during an event, it requires assistance from a variety of divisions and departments to be successful. Therefore, I'm grateful for City Utilities and Parks and Recreation, as well as Public Works Engineering staff for their assistance during these two events. Also, as you might imagine, running equipment continuously takes its toll, especially in adverse weather conditions. To that end, Fleet Operations has employees standing by during each event to address what we can as soon as possible. You typically do not end an event like this with the same number of vehicles you start with. The first event began on Saturday evening and ended at approximately 2 a.m. on Monday morning. However, we had staff pre-treating roadways both Thursday and Friday leading into the event. This first event brought ice layering on the front end and 5 inches of snow on the back end. Staff were able to enter neighborhoods on Monday during the day shift and had all routes to passable conditions by Wednesday, with Columbia Public Schools back in session on Thursday. Neighborhoods were addressed from the outside in, and we plowed the streets curb to curb. We also made the decision to haul snow out of downtown following this first event. This decision was made for two reasons: the anticipated severe cold weather on the backside of the event and the likelihood of the second event later in the week. Downtown is unique in that sidewalk is immediately adjacent to both the roadway and the buildings. Therefore, the snow is plowed to the center and must be collected and hauled out during significant events. Downtown haul out takes significant additional resources since we need crews on our other roadways at the same time. Downtown haul out is typically done at night using contracted dump trucks and drivers and loaders and loader operators from a variety of city departments. We also assign blockers for traffic control and to move along the occasional college student eyeing that giant pile of snow in the intersection as a mountain to conquer. The second event began just before midnight Thursday night and ended at approximately 11 a.m. on Friday morning. This second event brought another 4 to 5 inches of snow. Staff was able to enter neighborhoods on Friday and achieve policy-defined passable conditions around 4:30 p.m. on Saturday. Neighborhoods were addressed from the inside out, and we made one pass in and one pass out on all roadways. This was done to avoid plowing driveways back in and to reach each neighborhood as quickly as possible. Ice is always a challenge, but what makes these events particularly challenging was the combination of extreme cold and short periods of warming above freezing, causing some snowpack to melt and then refreeze. For reference, the practical working temperature of salt is generally considered to be something above between 15 and 20 degrees Fahrenheit. In my 16 plus years at the city, that isn't typical, and I think it's important that we consider that as we discuss how to move forward from here. Regardless, additional efforts were made through last week to continue to remove the remaining ice, including the use of backhoes late in the week. Most of our lingering issues were in the southwest part of the city and some of the outer perimeter subdivision streets. We attribute this to the outside-in, inside-out approach. The outer ring of the city had the longest time between plows, which added to the conditions in those areas. This event was also not 100% consistent north to south and east to west throughout town. There are a couple things in the works that we believe will improve winter weather response. The addition of a second salt facility will greatly improve response time citywide and provide a location to incorporate additional treatment options for extreme cold temperatures where salt is less effective. For instance, pre-wetted salt with magnesium chloride can help achieve better bare pavement results in colder temperatures. The treated salt can also be dyed so that it's more easily identifiable. It's significantly more expensive, but an option to have in lower quantities in addition to standard salt once we have a place to actually store it. The current salt dome, due to our most recent mild winters, still has some salt in it from upwards of 3 years ago. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Question? Yeah, Roy.
You said that when it's like 4 inches of snow, you guys go in through neighborhoods, and then you said you did all neighborhoods, or did I mishear?
We went into all neighborhoods during both events.
And on every street?
That's correct.
I beg to differ.
Is it, can you speak to whether or not it might sometimes not look because of you didn't get down to bare pavement?
Sure. This event had a lot of ice on the front end and super cold temperatures on the back end. And so there was a lot of ice pack that my snow plow does not lift snow. It only pushes snow. And so in the salt, we'd go out and salt, but the salt wasn't effective. And so it gave us a lot of trouble on some of those roads where we couldn't get underneath that and the salt wasn't doing any good.
I would encourage if there is any address or street that wasn't, you do have the trackers on the trucks where you can pull up the map and see where it was. It does like kind of a live feed. So you might provide Shane afterwards with a street address to look up.
Yeah, I definitely will. Okay, because mine didn't get done. And then also for citizens whose street remain iced over, what's the process of getting in contact with someone for someone to get back out there? I understand that you did it for certain streets, but what should a regular citizen do besides just contact their council person, because we don't have the magic wand?
Sure. During the active events, the call center holds all those calls because we're going to follow policy and we're not going to be chased all over town to wherever a call may come in. Once we close that event, all those come forward to us, and anything you all send goes through the same process. So anything that comes into the call center makes its way to the street division, and we go out and look at each one of those, whether that's someone that goes out and takes pictures and then brings a snowplow out, or we send a snowplow right to it. I can tell you that all the ones that I went to personally, all of them had been plowed twice.
You have a question or comment?
So you said you went out to all city streets. Does that mean all city streets were plowed or treated until they were deemed passable, or a plow went to all city streets? Just so I understand.
Sure. So during an event, we go to first, second, and third priority routes continuously until it's basically bare, curb to curb, as best we can get it. And you can drive around some of those first and second and third priority routes and find some ice. That's just the situation we were in. When we go into neighborhoods, the first time we went in, we went curb to curb, but there was snowpack and ice. Like I said, when it's that cold, the salt's not going to do as much good, and the snowplow just rides along the top of whatever's out there. So it'll go right over the top and take off anything that's loose and leave that ice below. And so we went in during the first event and went curb to curb. We went in during the second event and took one pass in and one pass out. So that would leave an area a little less than probably a parking spot wide on either side where you would have had whatever that new snow was. And that's mainly because, for a couple of reasons, like I said, was to get in there as soon as possible and to avoid plowing in driveways that have been shoveled out.
So you go in, once out on the second event, but it may not be passable still. Is that a possibility?
We deemed all roads passable following our second trip in on the second event. Sure.
Carlene, can you, in the microphone?
I was just asking Shane to repeat his definition of passable.
Passable is defined as a front-wheel drive vehicle at slow speed, utilizing reasonable winter weather driving.
Understood. Thank you.
Other council questions on this? I think one thing I did appreciate when staff was able to send, you know, kind of the photos, but also the real time kind of like tracker where it showed where. And so I think maybe making that more knowledgeable so that as council members are getting those, you know, if there's, I don't want to necessarily have to ask you, but you know, if there's some sort of things of which we can kind of, I don't know how easy it is to grab that data, but it was useful for me for when responding to constituents to send them where the plow did go by their place.
It's a little bit outdated technology, so it's a little bit harder to pull. But that being said, it's on every snowplow. And so I can show you for the most part, where each one of those went. There's better technology now where you can click on the street and it shows you any time a city vehicle has passed that. We don't have that. So you more have to look and see who got assigned that quadrant or that subward of town, see what number that vehicle is, and then research everything that that vehicle did. So it's a little bit time consuming, but it's doable.
And then also just the knowledge, and I think we can all do a better job too about putting out the words about if it is possible to pull cars off of the street, if there are sidewalks or parking lots nearby, that it is appreciated so it is easier for them to get down the street and closer to the curb.
Correct. Well, now that parking enforcement's back in Public Works, I can tell you that our parking enforcement agent was out once we hit 2 inches, putting warnings on vehicles, trying to get them off of our priority routes. That way we can do an effective job on those. For the most part, that's pretty successful. Where it gets a little harder is in neighborhoods. If you've got vehicles parked all over the road, which is totally legal, we can't plow around a car that's sitting there. And so there was lots of times where you'd see where we could definitely have been in and plowed, and we'd plowed around a car, that car had now moved. So a lot of times when I get calls, I can see where there's windrows of snow. And the only way that happens is if it's been plowed. So I think there was one eyebrow cul-de-sac on the first event that I believe we missed, and then one cul-de-sac on the back end on the second event that I question whether we were there. Other than that, everything that we've taken pictures of, I can tell we've been there.
Betsy.
So you're going to have a more complete or a final report the end of February, and it sounds like maybe sometime over the summer we maybe need to look at both the priority routes and just if there's anything else we need to consider doing.
Sure.
When we're not in the middle of a snowstorm.
That's always my suggestion, because we would tend to make pretty rash decisions in the middle of winter, in my opinion, and I probably couldn't respond to them anyway, because what you would be asking for is additional resources that, you know, we've ordered some snow plows I won't have for 18 months. So, you know, to replace ones that we've got. So we just have to be cognizant of how to best do that.
Well, and I think to that point, you know, if there are any, when we're talking about budget, upcoming fiscal year 26 budget, or yes, 26 budget, if there are any things that are related to sort of winter weather preparedness and response, just to make sure to highlight it for council as we get to that, as well as if there's any potential asks that we need to be aware of.
And what I'll make sure of is when we put that report together, we'll provide that a policy as an attachment. And I think that's important to look at, because we've geared up resources and staffing and all of that based on that. So if we want that to be something else, it can be anything from where it is now to, you know, prioritizing all the roads the same way, but it's going to be quite the expensive endeavor to go clear that far. So really it's a matter of what you want that to be, and then we can build it around that.
Okay. Thank you. Look forward to having that back. Any other staff comments? Carolyn, do you have anything else?
No, because I think we are going to go back into another meeting.
Yes. Okay, so to that point, we were in closed session previously at the pre-council meeting and were unable to complete the discussion due to time constraints. So we recessed that. We did not adjourn the pre-council. We recessed the closed session, and I would like to make a motion to return to closed session. Let me read pursuant to in conference room 101B of City Hall to discuss the preparation, including any discussions or work product on behalf of a public governmental body or its representatives for negotiations with employee groups, pursuant to section 610.0219 of the revised statutes of Missouri. Can I have a second?
Second.
Second by Nick Foster. I'll call roll. So Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo? Yes. Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll do that, and then Nancy, do I adjourn this meeting, though, the regular meeting?
Yes, you adjourn the regular session, okay. And we go into closed.
All right, I'll adjourn our January 21st regular council meeting, and we'll go back into closed session.